Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. This is just a crazy news day, and we've had a lot to cover. Something that people have been asking me to talk about is the Intercept article about Dr. Fauci. Now, my loyalty lies with Scott Hounsell from Red State, because he has been talking about this for a lot longer than Jonathan Karl and the serious media people have given him permission to. He's been talking about this story for, you know, he was one of the first people, and he FOIA'd documents. And at one point, he was actually rejected because they didn't consider Red State a serious enough publication. I don't even know how the system works with FOIAs. That doesn't seem to be something that would stop you from getting one just because they don't like your conservative publication. But Scott joins us now. We're going to break down Dr. Fauci. Mr. Hounsell, thank you so much for coming on the Grace Curley Show.
As always, Grace, it's always a pleasure.
Now, Scott, first of all, I know when I texted you yesterday and I said this Intercept article, you were like, yeah, we've been saying this for a really long time. But why is this picking up so much traction from people? Is there anything specific in these emails that's really making people open their eyes to just how much Fauci knew?
Well, a couple things it does is it obviously confirms all the reporting we've been doing at Red State since May. On May 13th, I actually published the grant that they were speaking about. Now, what they had that I didn't, that I had actually FOIA'd before they did, but the NIH and the NIAID did not want to respond, were the progress reports regarding those. And they had, there was much information in there about concerns about how safe the lab was, security. They were worried about mice biting research assistants and infecting them. And these humanized mice, these are mice with humanized cells. They're cells that appear more human and therefore can be infected by these different types of viruses or bacterial infections that they are testing in labs. In this particular case, this was a viral lab, and they were testing coronaviruses or bat-borne coronaviruses.
Yeah, so the grant proposals, there's a little bit of a breakdown in this Intercept article about the money that was going to the Wuhan lab and about Eco Health Alliance. Can you kind of explain to people why these names, why Peter Daszak, why Eco Health Alliance, why this is so important to understand and their relationship to Dr. Fauci?
So essentially what the issue is that the Eco Health Alliance's stated goal is about identifying specific types of viruses that may eventually become, human, maybe eventually infect humans. Therefore, we can develop the treatments and procedures and vaccines for them ahead of time so that we're ready. It's really a lofty goal. Bat-borne coronaviruses have been a problem in China for a long time. In fact, one was discovered in 2013, RATG-13, which shares 96% of its genomic code with SARS-CoV-2. Which leads us to believe, from a very logical standpoint, that was the base virus, the backbone, if you will, that they were conducting experiments that created SARS-CoV-2. Obviously, that still is a theory or at very least an educated guess. But in this particular case, we see what they were trying to do. And again, it's a lofty goal. But the fact was that once this spun out of control, once this got out of hand, it was how quickly they went on the defensive, and in some cases, the offensive. So in this case, Peter Daszak was out telling people in January of 2020, before we even knew anything about this virus, where it came from, and the rest of it, telling people, we've got to deny this came from the lab. He organized the Lancet letter, which then went out, and the liberal media used to discredit right-wing sources, saying, hey, wait a second, what's going on with investigating whether or not this came from a lab. It just, there's no rhyme nor reason to why they were so adamant about fighting against it, unless they were trying to protect themselves.
I'm speaking with Scott Hounsell from Red State. He has an entire series on Dr. Fauci, on the Wuhan lab, on gain of function. You can follow him on Twitter at Hounsizzle. Scott, Richard E. Bright, his thread on Twitter has gone viral. He's a molecular biologist at Rutgers, and he said that the documents make it clear that assertions by the NIH director Francis Collins and the NIAID director Anthony Fauci that the NIH did not support gain of function research or potential pandemic pathogen enhancement at WIV are untruthful. He's saying that Dr. Fauci's lying. A lot of other people are saying it. I mean, you're saying it. Rand Paul is saying it. Josh Hawley saying it. But I think the question now is, what, if anything, is going to happen? Are we going to see Dr. Fauci at hearings again? Rand Paul, as I'm sure you remember, Scott, gave Fauci an out. He gave him an opportunity to say, do you want to walk back this statement where you said that this was not happening, that gain-of-function research was not happening? And Fauci didn't just double down. He tripled down. He started attacking Rand Paul. So I think what my listeners want to know is, what's next?
Well, fortunately enough for us, the NIH and the NIAID, being federal agencies, publish their studies and their grant results online. And it's very easy to see that not only were they funding it at the WIV through the EcoHealth Alliance, but the NIH and the NIAID were funding it here in the United States through Ralph Barrick at UNC. So this is something that's been going on for a very long time. It's very, very easy to see that it's going on because they've got the results there online. Again, the question is, what are we going to do about it? What's going to happen to them? And unfortunately, I believe it's a whole lot of nothing. We know it's not just the fact that they were conducting this type of research. From 2014 to 2017, 2018, there was a ban, an outright ban from the United States federal government on gain-of-function research. Dr. Fauci went around that and continued funding at the UNC and continued funding at the NIAID and the WIV, and it shows that this man has no care for any authority. He believes he's the supreme authority on this. The president of the United States issued an order, and he ignored it. And so this idea that St. Fauci is infallible and that, you know, he's worked under seven presidents and he should be, you know, he ignored an order from Barack Obama. The left should be as mad about this as the right is, but they're not. Ultimately, because it's some way of "quote unquote" getting Trump. Let's make Trump wrong, and so at this point, I really don't see anything happening. Democrats are in control of both Congress and the White House. I imagine that after 2022, should the Republicans take the Senate and the House, there may be some investigations in this, and there may be a chance that Fauci is held in contempt of Congress.
Now, Scott, something I noticed is when Rand Paul did give Fauci an opportunity to clarify, you know, was gain of function happening, he was parsing his words, and Rand Paul called him out on that. He said, like, you're dancing around this definition, and you're trying to use all of this, you know, mental gymnastics to claim that it's not gain of function. And at the time, I kind of thought, well, maybe Dr. Fauci feels that if he says it's gain of function, and then people run with this idea that it's a massive conspiracy, that it was purposeful that they leaked it, or, you know, I could kind of see how he was trying to temper the conversation a little bit. But what I'm seeing based off these reports and how clearly it was gain of function and how they knew this, and there's emails back and forth, and it has this new air of nefariousness to me, where I can almost resolutely say, like, Fauci's a liar. Do you feel comfortable saying that? Like, he is a liar, and he knew he was lying, and this was very purposeful.
So when we originally wrote the story, I wrote something along the lines that what Fauci's testimony certainly seems like it was untrue. Within the weeks that followed that, the amount of evidence that came out to show that Dr. Fauci not only lied, I became extremely comfortable in saying it in June, because I could again go back to the data and say, you said this, but here's an actual study from the NIH. You signed off on this. How can you reconcile the statements of, we didn't fund this type of research, or this research doesn't rise to the level of gain of function, when the literal studies are gain of function and they show grant proposals or grants in the funding mechanisms from the NIH, the NIAID, US Predict, which was a joint venture between the Department of Defense and the NIH. All these things that we talk about, that we show this data, show these studies, show the evidence, and he can no longer hide behind the fact that people are ignorant about it. We now know, and we have become educated. While I'm certainly not thrilled that the Intercept put out this new article acting like this is brand new information, I certainly am glad that people are paying attention to it. And I'm certainly glad people are starting to ask questions, because we at Red State have been asking these questions for more than 6 months.
Now we're finally starting
to get some answers.
Yeah, you absolutely have. You've been asking these questions for a very long time. And Dr. Fauci was on CNN yesterday with Jim Sciutto, and there was no questions about this. They asked him about his opinion on the football games. Does he approve of all the maskless revelers? But there was no questions about gain of function, about the Wuhan lab. And my question for you, Scott, is you can't even get the FOIA request, so there's no way you're getting an interview with Dr. Fauci. I hate to break this to you. But in a crazy world where you're sitting down with Anthony Fauci, St. Fauci, and you get to ask him one or two questions, what do you ask?
Why are you lying? That would be my first question. I mean, at this point, he can't. It's not gain of function. Well, here's the studies. I would come prepared with the evidence. If I were asking him questions, I'd say, here's your statement. Here's the evidence. Reconcile them. Tell me how you can sit here with a straight face and tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about when I'm reading the study that labels it as gain of function. One of Ralph Baric's studies in 2015, during the ban, which was instituted by the Obama administration, which stated, yes, this is gain-of-function research, but our research has been authorized by the NIAID, which says that Dr. Fauci himself, again, the director of the NIAID, has now issued an order contrary to that of the President of the United States of America. This is evidence. There's data. I want to know, why are you lying? I don't need the second question. I need to know why you're lying. The question of whether or not he is lying, don't give him the out. Why are you lying? Why do you feel that you can lie to the American people? Bald-faced, look at us and say, your eyes deceive you. You know what you're reading here. The data is right in front of you, but you're not reading it properly. You're not translating it properly. And you need betters like me and my friends here at the NIAID to be able to tell you what you're reading. This is big government, top to bottom, and Dr. Fauci should not only be fired, he probably belongs in a prison cell.
Now, Scott, one more question here, because I'm just going to try to fit in as much as I can. Joe Biden's coming out with a 6-pronged plan tomorrow. I've talked to you a little bit about this off the air, but if you had to make a prediction about what he's going to roll out tomorrow for COVID, what do you see happening?
I think national mask mandate's coming. This goes back to the fact that they ignore the fact. I mean, there was an article the other day coming out of Oregon where there's doctors at Oregon hospitals that are saying, why aren't cases dropping off? Why aren't hospitalizations dropping off? We've had a mask mandate for 5 weeks. And you want to go, is anyone going to tell them? Well, you know, this idea that masks are this, and be all and end all, and that it's going to solve all the problems. So I believe a national mask mandate's coming, probably a national social distancing order, which would probably then shut down majority of concerts, football games, baseball games, those sorts of things that everyone's now back to enjoying. They're going to say, we're going to have to take a break from these just until we get this back under control. But again, there's always going to be another reason why they've got to continue this. There's always going to be another strain. There's going to be another variant. There's going to be another virus that they're going to want to perpetuate their emergency powers forever.
Absolutely.
And at some point, the American people are going to have to stand up.
Scott Hounsell, thank you so much for joining the show. Everyone can go to redstate.com. Just type in Scott Hounsell and read all of his work, or follow him on Twitter at Hounsizzle. He's one of the best. We love having him on, and we're very happy to call him a friend of the Grace Curley Show. We will be right back with your calls, 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
I see this incredible hypocrisy coming from the Christian right. amongst especially people like myself who say that abortion is wrong and say it's about the sanctity of life, yet they're so supportive of gun ownership. They're so supportive of AR-15s. Mm-hmm. They're so supportive of the death
penalty. You know what's crazy?
They're so supportive of...
This is The View. This is The View. And I can't do that to my listeners, but I will say they really think they're making great points. When they come out with these things, they conflate like all these different issues. And basically what it comes down to is you're a bad person. Sonny Hostin's a good person. Let me summarize it for you. Spark notes. That's what her point is. You suck. She's great. You're evil. She's sanctimonious. You're morally repugnant and bankrupt, and she is generous and caring and good and virtuous. That's the point. And they think they're making great points. That's the most frightening part. George, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, Grace. So great guest, great information. Some of it's been reiterated, right? We know it. And we want people held accountable, like Fauci, for sure, Fauci. But what ends up happening is the media has become so powerful that they can just ignore the stories, right? Fauci was on CNN yesterday. They could have asked him, and they don't. And no heads are going to roll in Afghanistan, it looks like, because the media is just ignoring that. Like, how do we beat this system down with you know, information like Fauci and people like running Afghanistan who did a horrible job, and then to hold them accountable when the stories don't get out, except for, and that's why your show's popular, Howie's is popular, mostly talk radio dominated by, not conservative thing, but for the most part, but the majority of the, you know, and I want to call them adults.
We're losing you a little bit, George, but you made a lot of good points there. And I'm going to give you two examples. And you know, they're not all-encompassing. They don't answer your question completely, but they're just two little examples of people fighting back. One is Joe Rogan, because as you pointed out, the media can make a story out of whatever they want. And sure, is punishment not watching them, not watching CNN, contributing to their low ratings? Of course. But what's even better is in the case of like a Nicholas Sandman, if you can soak them for all they're worth, like if you can get all of their money. And Joe Rogan is considering that because they ran all of these bogus stories about ivermectin. Cut 16, please, Jared.
Well, well, well. Old horseworm Rogan.
I'm glad you're well, man.
Bro, do I have to sue CNN?
I don't know. Do you?
They're making it up. They keep saying I'm taking horse dewormer. I literally got it from a doctor. It's an American company.
Mm-hmm.
They won the Nobel Prize in 2015 for use in human beings.
Yeah.
And CNN is saying I'm taking horse dewormer.
And there was a lot of people on Twitter saying, please sue them, please. That helps, you know? Making these people pay, making them feel a little bit of pain in their wallets is a good thing. And the second thing I'll say is that people are standing up and people are making their voices heard. And it's not always, you know, things you're going to hear about. But there's a Substack by Peter Boghossian, and he was a professor at Portland State University. And he got so much grief for teaching kids not what to think, but how to think, and for having these open conversations with kids and bringing in flat earthers and all different kinds of people. And you know, he said sometimes the kids agreed with them, sometimes they disagreed, sometimes, but they always had respectful conversations. They always really learned, you know, how to make arguments and how to build their case. And he seems like a really cool professor, like someone you'd walk away and go, that was a good class, that taught me something. And he's quitting because he got such grief over the last 10 years from students, from fellow professors, from everybody. I'll talk a little bit more about this, but there's definitely ways to fight back. And we'll also talk about Nancy Pelosi. The Archbishop at her home diocese in San Francisco is not happy with her. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. This piece is titled, My University Sacrificed Ideas for Ideology, So Today I Quit. I'm just going to read you a couple of parts of this. I think this is happening more frequently than we would even know. People are getting really fed up. He talks about all the speakers he would have and he would invite in to talk to his students at Portland State University, from flat earthers to Christian apologists to global climate skeptics to Occupy Wall Street advocates. I'm proud of my work. I invited those speakers not because I agreed with their worldviews, but primarily because I didn't. From those messy and difficult conversations, I've seen the best of what our students can achieve. Questioning beliefs while respecting believers, staying even tempered in challenging circumstances, and even changing their minds. That's something we don't hear a lot about nowadays, is changing your mind. It's seen as a negative. But, you know, if you have a good conversation with someone, my mind's changed all the time on this show. People call in about things that I have an opinion on, but it might not be an informed opinion. Might be something that I think, and then someone tells me something else, and I go, you know what, I never thought of it that way. But that's seen as a negative now. Anyone who disagrees with you or makes you uncomfortable enough to challenge your opinion is bad. I shouldn't say makes you uncomfortable. They make you question what you think you know, and that is seen now as unacceptable. You know, we all have to have our own beliefs, and that's it. End of story. He said, I never once believed, nor I do now, that the purpose of instruction was to lead my students to a particular conclusion. Rather, I sought to create the conditions for rigorous thought. That's the old saying that every time I talk to parents nowadays who have kids in school, they say, when I was in school, they taught us how to think, not what to think. That's exactly what he's saying. He sought to create the conditions for rigorous thought, to help them gain the tools to hunt and furrow for their own conclusions. That is why I became a teacher and why I love teaching. That's probably why he's a really good teacher. Some of the best teachers I've ever had, I had no idea what their politics were. In fact, one of them came in as a VIP a couple months ago. I said I had no idea. He was a history teacher. He was awesome, too. We would play Jeopardy. You know, we would, like, it was an American history class, and you really learned a lot about history, but you had a lot of fun, you know? It wasn't stressful. You learned a lot, and it was really cool. And he came in here, and I said, I had no idea you were a conservative. And his wife said to me, that's because he's a good teacher. He didn't, you know, you left the class not knowing where he felt on certain things. You just got the facts. But brick by brick, the university has made this kind of intellectual exploration impossible. It has transformed a bastion of free inquiry into a social justice factory whose only inputs were race, gender, and victimhood, and whose only outputs were grievance and division. Students at Portland State are not being taught to think. Rather, they are being trained to mimic the moral certainty of ideologues. And professors were accused of bigotry for assigning texts written by philosophers who happen to have been European and male. And then you see stories in the Wall Street Journal about how, what was the title of it? It was like, white men give up on college. I'm like, well, that's painting it in a negative light. I think white men realize that college for them is useless. And actually, I don't want to get too far off here because I want to go back to this, but in Powerline blog, Stephen Hayward wrote about this whole idea about how white men aren't going to universities. And he says, the really interesting detail is conveyed in this sentence. Enrollment rates for poor and working class white men are lower than those of young Black, Latino, and Asian men from the same economic backgrounds. So it's not just men, but specifically white men who are bailing out of college the most. But maybe they're just sick of being told over and over again that they don't matter, or that they have to raise their hands second, or that they're the worst people in the world, or that they're inherently racist. Who would pay to go to school to learn about how terrible they are and how they have to check their privilege? Who would want to do that? And then on top of it, in case the Wall Street Journal really can't figure this out, on top of it, you could say, all right, well, you're going to learn a bunch of crap. You're going to learn a bunch of ideology that you don't believe, and, you know, all of this woke social justice baloney. You're going to learn all of that, but you're going to have the college experience. And for a lot of people, that is the reason they send their kids to college. I mean, a perfect example, my dad didn't go to college. They didn't have money for it. And he went straight into working. And when I used to call him up complaining about grades and stuff in college, because I was a mega nerd, and I would complain about this class or that class, he used to say to me, like, you having any fun? Is anyone at the quad? Any parties going on? Because he didn't get the experience of it. And when he was in the working world, people always talked about college and how fun it was and the friendships they made. So for my parents, they sent me there to get an education, of course, But a huge component of it was the social fun. And now, because of COVID, you don't even have that. So you're learning a bunch of crap that's useless and that maybe you don't even believe, but you're not allowed to say you don't believe or else you'll fail. And then you have to sit around in masks and not socialize in your dorms and not go out to parties and not do anything fun. Oh, P.S. The price tag's like $100,000. Have I convinced you yet to buy into this? No, of course not. It's a terrible business model. Pay us tons of money so we can tell you how awful you are and so you can have no fun. Sign me up for that. But back to this teacher. I just had to go on. That was a little bit of a tangent. He says, students at Portland State are not being taught to think. Rather, they are being trained to mimic the moral certainty of ideologues. At first, I didn't realize how systemic this was, and I believed I could question this new culture, so I began asking questions. What is the evidence that triggers warnings and safe spaces contribute to students' learning? What should racial consciences be the lens through which we view our role as educators? How did we decide that cultural appropriation is immoral? Unlike my colleagues, I ask those questions out loud and in public. This is kind of getting back to what that caller said. Like, if the media doesn't listen to us, what can we do? Well, I wouldn't worry too much about what the media says because no one's watching them anyway. The more I read the primary source material produced by critical theorists, the more I suspected that their conclusions reflected the postulates of an ideology, not insights based on evidence. The more I spoke out about these issues, the more retaliation I felt. Early in 2016, in the 2016 academic year, a former student complained about me, and the university initiated a Title IX investigation. My accuser, a white male, made a slew of baseless accusations against me, which university confidentiality rules, unfortunately, prohibit me from discussing. What I can share is that students of mine who were interviewed during the process told me the investigator asked them if they knew anything about me beating my wife and children. This horrifying accusation soon became a widespread rumor. With these Title IX investigations, there is no due process, so I didn't have access to particular accusations, the ability to confront my accuser, and I had no opportunity to defend myself. Finally, the results of the investigation were revealed in December 2017. Ready for this? The last two sentences of this report. This guy's crime is being an actual teacher. This guy's crime is letting kids have the freedom to make up their own minds and maybe hear an opinion that doesn't go along with what all of their other woke teachers have told them since they were in kindergarten, breaking down their oppressive traits. That is this guy's crime. And these are the last two sentences. Global diversity and inclusion finds that there is insufficient evidence that Bogosian, that's the professor's name, violated PSU's prohibited discrimination and harassment policy. GDI, that's Global Diversity and Inclusion, recommends he receive coaching. So they have no evidence that he did anything wrong, but he has to be coached. He has to go to Diversity University and still learn about how bad of a teacher he is because he's teaching them how to think. He goes on to talk about some of the things he did to try to shake the university from its madness, including, it kind of sounds like he was a pioneer of woke or joke. He would come up with these journals and he would get them published that were just absurd, that were kind of mocking the university. I'm actually going to read you the title of one. He goes, in 2017, I co-published an intentionally garbled peer-reviewed paper that took aim at the new orthodoxy. Its title, The Conceptual Penis as a Social Construct. This example of...
I'm so mad we didn't come up with that one.
He's a woke or joke pioneer. This example of pseudo-scholarship, which was published in Cogent Social Sciences, argued that penises were products of the human mind and responsible for climate change. Immediately thereafter, I revealed the article as a hoax designed to shed light on the flaws of the peer review and academic publishing systems. I got to give this to Howie. He would love this. And so after that happened, people started drawing swastikas in the bathroom with his name underneath them. The university didn't do anything. He said he would show up to his office door. Sometimes there was a bag of feces by his door. Again, the university did not stand up for him at all. And meanwhile, intolerance continued to grow at Portland State. In March of 2018, a tenured professor disrupted a public discussion I was holding with an author. In June 2018, someone triggered the fire alarm during my conversation with popular cultural critic Carl Benjamin. In October 2018, an activist pulled out the speaker wires to interrupt a panel with former Google engineer James Damore. These are all things that just trying to silence him. You notice that? They're so afraid of what? Not of him. Not of him. Not that he's going to, you know, hurt anybody. They're afraid of his words. They're afraid of his ideas. They're afraid of people that he's bringing in to talk about things they disagree with. It's so cowardly to be afraid of open discussion at a university. At a university. That's what these things used to be about. They used to be liberal colleges. And now they're illiberal. It's insane. For me, the years that followed were marked by continued harassment. I'd find flyers around campus of me with a Pinocchio nose. I was spit on and threatened by passerbyers. When walking to class, I was informed by students that my colleagues were telling them to avoid my classes. And of course, I was subjected to more investigation. I wish I could say that what I'm describing hasn't taken a personal toll, but it has taken exactly the toll it was intended to. An increasingly intolerable working life and without the protection of tenure. This isn't about me. This is about the kind of institutions we want and the values we choose. Every idea that has advanced human freedom has always and without fail been initially condemned. As individuals, we often seem incapable of remembering this lesson, but that is exactly what our institutions are for. To remind us that the freedom to question is our fundamental right. While I'm grateful for the opportunity to have taught at Portland State for over a decade, it has become clear to me that this institution is no place for people who intend to think freely and explore ideas. This is a really good piece. Again, so many great things today. I'll tweet this out as well. Bob, let's go to Bob really quick before we go to break here. What's going on, Bob?
A couple of quick things. First, lest we never forget that we never confuse higher education with intelligence.
Absolutely.
But listen, I had a teacher in high school, real quick. We'd have five issues, capital punishment, abortion, Second Amendment, welfare, and a couple other things. And we had to write whether we were pro or con. And then what he did, he had us come in and we had a debate, the opposite side of the argument. And I'll tell you, not only did I learn how the other people thought, but it changed my mind in two aspects of two things that I believe to this day. And I taught my daughter that, and I tell everybody, and it gives you a great ammunition to fight your point because you know the other person's stance. And it also gives me compassion to people that believe maybe differently than me, because I once believed that myself when it comes to capital punishment and abortion. So, it taught us critical thinking and how to see both sides of an argument. And it was the greatest lesson I ever learned from him. And he was a history teacher, by the way. And I learned a great lesson from him.
Yeah, and Bob, I think another part of what's changed in the last few years or even the last few decades is that what the left has done in a lot of circumstances, I see this a lot. You'll be having a debate back and forth, or, you know, someone will say, don't allow so-and-so on your program. Tucker Carlson shouldn't be invited on here, or this person shouldn't be allowed to speak here. And the defense from the left is, we don't have to have a debate because you're evil. You know, there's no reason for me to debate you because you're a repugnant person. You're evil. You know, there's no sense in arguing with a racist. There's no sense in arguing with and that's really a sad thing, because like you said, debate is good. And an exchange of ideas is good. And it doesn't have to be nasty. And it doesn't have to get so vicious. You know, I disagree with a lot of people, but I would never say that those people are bad. I would never say they're evil. Most of the people I disagree with that I know in real life are great. I love them. They care about their kids. They care about their country. We just happen to disagree. But we've lost that in this country. It's become really, really polarizing. And there are still a lot of good teachers out there, though. I had so many. I had a teacher wrote to me a few months ago. Okay, I put out a podcast or something on Instagram, and she wrote back and she said, I just listened to this whole podcast. I disagree. She was my sixth grade teacher. She said, I disagree with your politics completely. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud that you're my student and how much you're accomplishing. And I was like, that's such a cool teacher, because she disagrees with me, but she's happy that she was part of someone's life and helped create a student that has different ideas. That's a good thing. All your students, if you're a teacher and all your students leave and end up agreeing with everything you've ever said, maybe you didn't teach them to think that critically. Just a thought. But yeah, shout out to all the good teachers out there. There's a lot of them. We'll be back with the microwave man himself, Howard Lawrence Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler and For the Boys. I've got to keep the troops entertained.
Today's car crossover is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Call Steve today, 508-444-8003. That's 508-444-8003. Or visit fairwayfinancial.net. All right, so my poll question today, I stole from Howard Lawrence Carr, and I'll tell you why. Today is the 17th anniversary of Rathergate. Maybe you want to call it Memogate, fake but accurate gate, whatever gate you want to add on. This is the 17th anniversary of when Dan Rather presented four inauthentic documents that he thought looked very real, which brings us to our poll question, and I'm very curious to have Howie vote on this. The poll question today is brought to you by J.J. Manning. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more on how to get your property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. Jared, what is the poll question in honor of this fake but accurate anniversary?
Who's the Dan Rather of 2021? Jim Acosta, Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, Brian Stelter, Jake Tapper, or Nicole Wallace?
I'm going to say, because of how much people seem to like her on the left and how much influence she has and how many conspiracy theories she peddles, I'm going to say Rachel Maddow.
Dr. Fauci's dream girl, Rachel Maddow, in the lead at 36%, 26% for Jim Acosta, 11% for Joy Reid, Jake Tapper, 9% for Nicole Wallace. Brian Stelter is at 7%.
Howie, what do you think?
I might go for Jake Tapper just because of his role in the Russian collusion hoax. The first day, peddling it wildly like it was real, and now it's like, who, me? You know, he looks around and people say, yeah, we got to do something about that fake news.
By the way, Howie, Alma Gaucha, one of our favorite restaurants, they're going to be on Chronicle tonight.
They are. They got a 3-minute slot on Channel 5, and we're going to have some food. It's a good night for the VIPs to be here.
Very good night.
They're going to have some great. It's a great, great steakhouse on D Street in South Boston. We'll be talking more about that. But you can find out for yourself. See video of what they do at Alma Gaucha tonight on Chronicle at 7:30.
So I texted Neil McCabe and I said, what do you think this 6-prong plan is going to be about with COVID tomorrow? He said, masks, 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 boosters, testing, mandate, passports. Biden is bleeding support. He needs something big to flip the script. This won't work. We are COVID savvy and jaded. All right. Howie Carr is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.